Hi, and welcome to the Advanced SCD Techniques Q&A session number one. I'm Steve Wright, and with me tonight I have Jordan Reisner. And before we get started, we just want to thank everyone who submitted any questions tonight. We're going to make our best attempt to cover them all. There was a pretty good-sized list. And before we get rolling, though, we have a couple things we want to address right away. The first thing is kind of a disclaimer, if you will, but it's also really like a plea to everyone out there who's listening to this, who's in the course with us. We're not doctors, you know that. We're engineers, and we're always looking to learn and striving to better ourselves and our health the best we can and then share that with you. Now, we work hard to try to find the truth out both for us and for you as much as we can, and we would never knowingly give anyone bad advice. But we do want to put a little caveat in there. We work with our doctors, and we want to encourage you to do the same thing, especially if you're someone who's using prescription drugs. We worked even more closely with our doctors when Jordan was on prescription drugs, and we just want to really let you know that doctors are trained in prescription drugs, and they understand them much better than what we do. So just try to find someone who will work with you. And in the meantime, please, we want to urge you to do your own due diligence before believing or trying anything we say regarding supplements or prescription drugs. You are your brother's keeper of your health and everything. So we just want to kick that off by putting it out there because, you know, we gave you a couple warnings in the last presentation. And as we go along in this course, we're going to get deeper and deeper into some other treatments that you need to be aware of if you're taking, you know, very powerful prescription drugs. You need to think about what you're doing with this stuff. It's not a free-for-all just to go grab and try things. Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, let's get rolling with a question to start off the night that came in really late, but we want to address it right away. Okay, here we go. Thanks for all the great info. My question pertains to betaine. I'm up to 10 pills, and I'm not sure if I felt the burning yet. Also, I'm experiencing wicked acid reflux and heartburn. When I did the acid test, I came up with nothing all three times. Needless to say, I'm a little worried. Could I have caused some damage by taking too much, as I have seen some blood return? Need help. Thanks so much, Nate.
I just want to start up by saying we're really happy to see so many people taking action and trying betaine-HCL. And you know, we've noticed a little bit of risky behavior, but we just want to remind you, you know, like Steve said, that things like betaine-HCL carry some major risk factors. So I just want to remind you the following is taken from Dr. Jonathan Wright's book, Why Stomach Acid is Good for You. And he says, HCL supplementation should never be taken by anyone who is also using any kind of anti-inflammatory medication, such as corticosteroids, i.e. prednisone, aspirin, Indocin, ibuprofen, like Motrin or Advil or other NSAIDs. These drugs can damage the GI lining that supplementary HCL might aggravate, increasing the risk of gastric bleeding or ulcers. Although he does say that there are occasions when the risk related to HCL replacement may be higher than we would like, but in these cases, as long as the potential benefits outweigh the risks, he still recommends the treatment. So to get to the root of the question with Nate, the warmth usually happens in 30 minutes to an hour after taking the pills. So, you know, how many milligrams are each of the pills that you're taking? So remember that Dr. Wright said the average range he sees in his clinic is 3,250 to 4,550 milligrams. So based on that, you know, anything around 10,000 milligrams, I would look back down and get more testing probably because you want to confirm what's going on. At that point, you're taking, you know, two times the average. So you're going to be definitely an outlier of the normal average dosage that he sees. You know, we've heard of people going above that, but we think it'd be prudent to be trying something like the Heidelberg test at that point to confirm, you know, what's going on there, just because you are going to be an outlier outside the average. So I think that about sums that up. I would definitely just pursue getting that checked out a little further with some more, you know, proficient testing like the Heidelberg test. That's a simple test where they actually just have you swallow a pill. And that pill takes readings of your acid, pH levels in your stomach, and then they can get accurate readings of what's going on down there that are more reliable than just the at-home test. So to kind of keep rolling, you know, we've been getting a lot of comments and emails about the 5-day diet and the feel-good zone blueprint. And so both of those tools we just want to talk about a little bit that they're not necessarily meant to be tweaked to fit your life. So they are universal, and for the most part, they won't work if you decide to change them too much. We created them based on what we know has worked with clients, and they're not special tweaks for you in the beginning. So that kind of leads us into some more of these questions here, and I'll just dive right in. So Steve, this question is also from Nate. He says, great job on the webcast. I got some great tips. I was wondering more about the two different approaches to continuing on the diet, specifically the one that started out with the 5-day, then introduced new stuff in a specific order. I was not really seeing any improvements over the last couple of weeks, but I just upped my probiotics, made it up to 2 digestive enzymes, and then I started multivitamins along with the betaine the last couple of days. I'm already feeling so much better. I also completely stopped eggs, and I've been on and have not been on any of the 4 horsemen. I've not been on any fruit at all either, and I'm nervous about introducing it, but maybe now it will go better. He wants to know more about the section where you guys gave 2 different options for moving forward on the diet. One option you gave with the 5-day diet, then introducing food every 4 days. And you gave a specific order as to which foods to introduce when. So, Steve, take it away, man.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nate, for all the questions you put in. So I just kind of want to give a little 5-minute review of the 2 paths that we described in session 1. Tuning into your body. And the first path was what we called the feel good zone blueprint. And basically what that was is we've kind of mapped out the fastest way that we've been able to get clients to go from a state where maybe they're unsure what to do, they're not feeling great, and they've tried a couple different things. They have all these convoluted ideas and they're not really sure where to go. We just wipe the slate clean and we say, start with the 5-day diet. Use these supplements and use this introduction method. And that's the fastest way we get people there. So if that's where you're at, if you're sitting at home and you're a little overwhelmed, you're a little lost, excuse me, I would say go right for the blueprint method. However, there's a lot of people who they think that they've figured out, and maybe they have figured out, a lot of what's going on in their body. And so that's why we included the second path, which was all the tweaks where you can kind of know what's going on in your body. So if you chose the second path, then you would be going tweak by tweak and kind of just analyzing, start with the food, then go with the supplements and figure it out from there. So the first path is not really designed for anyone to tweak. However, if you find yourself in path number 2, like Nate is, and he's basically done exactly what we said to take out the 4 horsemen, he's introduced a lot of stuff from the blueprint, the feel good blueprint, which is the enzymes, the probiotics, multivitamins, betaine, and he's feeling really good. So what I would say is go to our list of the different vegetables and fruits and how to introduce them and start right from there. You can mix them up a little bit, but I guess that's just kind of a recap of how we wanted to treat the 2 paths and how to know which path maybe you should be on.
I think that's a great point, Steve. And the only thing I'll interject for Nate is that, he says he's taken a lot of betaine. He says he's feeling better, so while you might be an outlier with the betaine, taking 10 pills at this point, one thing that I would reiterate is that if you've been doing it for 2 days and you're feeling better, then the betaine is probably helping. If you've been doing it for 2 days and you haven't seen any improvement, and maybe even you're regressing a little bit, that might be something that you want to test taking back out at that point too. So I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Jordan. And I forgot the fact that Nate had just wrote in and talked about the blood that he said might have came back or shown up. So, it could have been something you introduced, or it could be the betaine. But, whatever you were doing 2 days ago or 3 days ago when you sent the first one, go back to doing that and see if the blood goes away. And if you have any of the risk factors above that we talked about with the betaine, maybe you want to take that out for a few days and then try it again or something like that.
Well, it looks like he just sent us in a message. He's taking 300 milligram pills. So at 10 pills, that'd be 3,000 milligrams.
Okay, great. So yeah, that's not even in the range of what Dr. Wright. It's at the very low end of what Dr. Wright sees in his clinic. And I personally have taken anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 milligrams a day. I think the other thing to really remember when it comes to the betaine is that your stomach acid is really, it's really a crazy environment in there. It's like one of the most acidic environments on the face of the earth. So if you do have a little burning, you know, one day in a row, 2 days in a row, as you're trying to figure out the dosage, then you're not causing any long-term damage. The lining of the stomach is really used to dealing with really, really low pHs, like in the 1-2 range. So don't really worry about like doing some right away damage if you're just messing around and can't figure out that exact dosage. All right, so let's get rolling on to question number two here. I'm going to feed this one to you, Jordan. This one's from Ashley, and she says, "Hey guys, great session. I wasn't able to attend live, but I just watched it now. And I got my Prozymes in the mail and took one pill along with 3 betaine HCLs, in quotations, 1,000 milligrams. Whoa, my stomach is burning. So my question to you, how do you do a half a pill of the Prozymes? Can I break the capsule and mix half of it in a glass of water?"
All right, great question, Ashley. So just to start off, yes, you can break the capsule in half, and you can drink like half of the shot of water. Let me take one betaine HCL pill at a time to find your dosage, because everybody is different. My other thought is, do you know if it was the enzymes or the betaine HCL causing the pain? And the reason I say that is we have to distinguish between the two, right? Excuse me. They said, you know, we've said before that some people, about 25%, tend to feel stomach pain from the enzymes during an adjustment period that can be anywhere from 1 day to 4 weeks. So mistaking that for the upper limit of betaine can actually be a big problem if you start them both at the same time. So the research on the stomach pain that you get from enzymes is that it's a little different, right? Because proteases, they can cause irritation to seriously injured stomach tissues. So in that case, a gentler approach tends to work better. So for example, starting with a half pill at every meal and working up over a period of 2 weeks as you adjust. And the enzymestuff.com has an analogy that the proteases are not harming the injured tissue, they're just irritating it. So think of it like you might have a skinned knee or a similar injury. The wounded area is hurting, it may be even bleeding. Maybe there's dirt in the area at the beginning of the infection. You need to clean the wound and apply disinfectant. So this is needed to help the wound heal, but it doesn't sting, but it does sting and hurt the cleaning out process a little bit. So it's similar to what the proteases are doing in your stomach. They're cleaning out wounds, they're cleaning out infections, and that may cause some irritation in the beginning. So my suggestion would be to, you know, if you're starting them both at the same time, you might start with the enzymes first for a day and see if those are what are triggering the stomach pain. If they're not, great, take two at every meal, and then do the betaine, increasing one at a time until you hit your upper limit there. All right, excellent. So I'm going to keep rolling. Great questions. So this is for you, Steve. This is question number 3. I forgot to ask, how long after you hit your dosage for the betaine HCL did it take to see a change in terms of stool or other?
Okay, that's a great question, and this is a several-parter question, so if it sounds a little weird, that's why. I think Jordan's going to rapid-fire them at me. But I think Jordan kind of mentioned this earlier in one of the other questions, but basically we'd look to see a change in the stool within 2 to 3 days, probably on the max. That's basically just kind of depending on people's transit times. Both of us usually see them relatively quickly, like by the next day or so. So that's just kind of what you should be looking for there.
All right, I'm going to keep rapid fire. How long in your experience were you on the HCL at that dosage? How long did it take to taper off the HCL?
Okay, this is a great question, and I want to be completely honest with everyone who's listening. And the answer is that we are both actively working on the tapering, and we haven't really figured it out yet. Every time we try a new way of doing it or try a new solution, it doesn't quite always work out. So the stomach acid question of, you know, bringing it back to perfect health is one of the main ones we're both trying to solve at this point. So we don't currently have the solution, and we're working on it.
Excellent. All right, next one. Also, I still have blood in my stool, consistently at the end of a BM. It's a rich red color. What is this indicating? I haven't been able to get rid of it, although it hasn't so far been increasing in amount.
And that's another great question. So being that the blood is very bright in color, we would probably assume that it's either a fissure hemorrhoid or an external hemorrhoid, just meaning that with the bright red, it means it's coming from the lowest part of the bowel, the rectum. However, it can be a sign of something like a chorionic polyps or tumors, diverticulitis. Abnormal small vessels called AVMs may also cause bleeding right near the lower part of the bowel there. If there's no pain really associated with it, or you know, minus amounts or small amounts, it's probably the Fischer hemorrhoid. And really, to work on one of those, you really gotta try to up the fats. You wanna get the get some more probiotics in your diet, and you're looking to get some smoother and softer stools. And you're definitely looking not to strain at all on the toilet. Like, you shouldn't be, you know, quote, pushing at all. Some other things is you wanna try to get as much anti-inflammatory measures into your diet as possible. So fish oil would be a great one to start with. So really the primary things are, don't push at all when you're on the toilet. If you sit down and you kind of have like a fakie where nothing comes out and you don't want to push, that's fine. Just sit down. If it's not going to come right away, then get up and come back later. But you're really trying to shoot for Bristol stool charts of fours and fives to avoid irritating the fissure. That was a great question from Amber, so thank you. Okay, so moving on to question number four. So from Joanna, this is part of the class concerning supplements, so this may be better for the second class. It might be, but we're going to handle it right now. I'm overwhelmed of how to orchestrate all my supplements. Currently, I take a multivitamin, calcium, vitamin D, omega-3, vitamin B, digestive enzymes, and I want to add a probiotic like acidophilus or maybe S. boulardii, but I know that those have to be on an empty stomach and possibly not with food or taken at the same time, ? I also want to start incorporating betaine HCl in parentheses when I finally get it shipped from Frida. Yes, we've been there. I know that it's supposed to be at every meal, but can I also take it with digestive enzymes without any interference? Thanks, Joanna.
All right, great question, Joanna. So just kind of touching on the part for this week, enzymes and betaine don't interfere with each other. They'll work together to break down your foods, get the right pH level, really help you get those nutrients broke down. Most people say to take enzymes after a meal and betaine before or during the meal. I'm not really sold either way. I've experimented with everything. And to be completely transparent, I've gotten lazy over the last year, and I just take them both at the end of the meal so I don't have to keep getting up. But, you know, the big thing we talked about earlier is if you start taking them at the same time, sometimes if you get stomach pain, it's hard to distinguish which is which. So you might want to stagger starting them. But in terms of taking them both at the same time after you've already known what's going on, you know your upper limits for betaine, I wouldn't hesitate to take them. You know, take the betaine right before, during the meal, and the enzymes right after. As far as the probiotics, some literature we've looked at suggests taking probiotics on an empty stomach, so you have a higher percentage of the bacteria that make it past the stomach acid alive. When it's the most ideal pH for you to be able to do that would be right when you wake up, like 30 minutes before a meal, and then 2 hours after a meal, you know, ideally like at bedtime. So start there. If you're going to try S. boulardii, you know, you could take that with your probiotics, and they're not going to, you know, counteract each other or anything, so I wouldn't worry about that. All right, excellent. So I'm going to keep rolling. Steve, this question is from Stephanie. She says, I'm having trouble finding the right dose for the HCl. My stomach hurts with dull pain most of the time, and I did a baking soda test and never burped. I found that 4,500 milligrams of HCl did cause the heartburn and burning symptoms, but 4,000 doesn't seem to be making any difference in my stomach pain. Do you have any suggestions on how to proceed? Thanks.
Okay, Stephanie, great question. And sorry they're experiencing that trouble right now. So the first thing would be, not really sure what other supplements you're on, like if you started digestive enzymes or if you haven't. So what could be happening is like what we talked about or what Jordan talked about earlier, where your stomach line is pretty inflamed and pretty damaged, and you might want to try some digestive enzymes right now, and maybe they'll help clean up what's going on in there. Now, having the stomach pain all the time, that's not necessarily a good thing. It shouldn't be like that. So a couple things you could try if you're having like a heartburn, stomach pain type thing is maybe try like taking a shot of vinegar or supplementing with some salt. That might help reduce the acidity and get rid of the pain, because it's usually actually what happens is a lot of times what happens is the esophageal lining has no protective ability from the stomach acid. So even if a little drop gets on the esophagus, it's going to really hurt really bad, but even though there's not going to be much damage there. So maybe if you try some vinegar or something like that, it might help clear it out. The other thing I would urge you to do if digestive enzymes and this kind of persists for the next week is probably get an upper endoscopy done like right away to check for any ulcers. That is a sign possibly of an upper stomach ulcer or something like that, something that's going on in there. So this might be a case where if you can't through supplements with the betaine and the enzymes and some of the salt or vinegar get rid of it, it's time to call in some reinforcements from your doctor to help try to figure out what's going on. So, and I'm not sure exactly how long you've been at your betaine limit of 4,000 milligrams, which is great work finding it, by the way. But sometimes it can take, 3 to 4 days, like we talked about, to get into the correct zone. So if you've been at that zone for a couple days now, then you start enzymes, nothing happens, then that's when I'd be looking to get some more help. Okay, cool. So we'll keep rolling on to question number 6. Jordan, got one for you here. So I'm already feeling better! Great. You guys recommended 3 specific supplements that seem to be the building block formula: digestive enzymes, probiotics, and betaine HCL. So far, I've ramped up to 2 digestive enzymes a meal. You gave specific instructions on how to take the betaine HCL. But is it okay to take it simultaneously with the enzymes, because both of them have to be taken at the same time before you eat the meal? That's in parentheses. I know that the digestive enzymes are okay with me, no weird stomach pain, so I feel ready to introduce the BHCL. What if someone was starting both at the same time? Is that recommended?
All right, this is a multi-parter from Joanna. Thanks again, Joanna. Okay, so, like I said earlier, some people feel stomach pain from enzymes in and of themselves during the ingestion period, which can take anywhere from 1 day to 4 weeks. So mistaking that for the upper limit of your betaine can be a huge problem. So they wouldn't mix well if you started them together. However, you mentioned that you've already started the enzymes. So if you're not having any stomach pain from the enzymes, you can begin the betaine without worrying about it. Like I said before, take the betaine before the meal and or during the meal, and then the enzymes right after, and you'll be fine. They can both be taken at the same time. They work together to aid in digestion during meal.
Yeah, you can take them both at the end of the meal, too, if you want. We've both gotten lazy and started doing that. But most places that you talk to, most naturopaths you'll talk to, they'll tell you to take your betaine at the beginning of the meal, take your digestive enzymes at the end of the meal. Okay, so let's roll on to the rest of this double-parter here. So, also, isn't there a rule about probiotics when you're supposed to take them on an empty stomach? How much can I work up to, and how fast, and when should I take them?
All right, excellent. So I touched on this a little bit earlier about some literature suggests that you have a better shot at getting most of the bacteria alive to your small intestine if you take it 30 minutes before a meal, ideally right when you wake up, or 2 hours after a meal, like at bedtime. You can split the dosage, takes half right when you wake up, take half right before you go to bed. That's going to be your best shot. As far as ramping up, I'm assuming you got probably the 10 billion CFU from GI ProHealth. I would say start with 1 pill per day with those, right when you wake up or first thing when you go to bed, and then work your way up to 30 to 40 billion CFUs, so 3 to 4 pills a day over the course of 2 weeks. You can split those up, half in the morning and half right before you go to bed. All right, well, great question, Joanna. Thanks again. I hope things are going well. I'm going to keep rolling to the next question. Steve, this one's for you. This is from Sandy. She says, I tested positive for high candida about a year ago. My doctor put me on Diflucan and a candida diet. I was a very crabby person for over a month. Unfortunately, I ended up going back to some of my previous diet before starting SCD. I've had a bit of some crabbiness symptoms with SCD, but not as bad. So my question is, how do you effectively differentiate between diet and food sensitivity? I think BTVC says not to worry about candida. It will take care of itself through focusing on diet, but I'm wondering if it would be worthwhile to focus on it before trying to test other tweaks. What do you think?
Okay, thanks, Sandy. That's a great question. So, yes, BTVC does usually take the road that diet will do it by itself. And for a lot of people, it will if you adhere to it strictly and you do like the low candida version, which is kind of the low sugar, low fruit, and you do it for quite some time. Me and Jordan are of the opinion that if you've definitely confirmed it through a lot of lifestyle factors and you have a test that proves it, that there's no reason to postpone treating it. You already know exactly what the problem is, so go after it. As far as what's going on with you, we have heard that some people will have to do like multiple rounds of nystatin, like every 6 months or so in the beginning, if they're not getting the rest of their diet and supplementing regime down, and they keep running into more and more candida problems, like, you know, the same symptoms keep creeping back into your life. So you might need to look at possibly getting tested again and then maybe doing another round of Diflucan, or maybe a longer term round of nystatin, such as a three month round of nystatin to really drive the candida out of your life. As far as like, you know, just sitting still with candida and not really, you know, doing anything else, no other tweaks, I would keep your diet a little bit bland and definitely anti-candida, anti-yeast right now, which is the low sugar. But candida definitely, the way it lives is it usually affects your stomach acid, and it likes it to be at a higher pH so that it can live longer. So I would encourage you to still pick up the digestive enzymes, see if they help out. Also do the betaine HCL test and check it and see how that goes, because usually what we find with almost all of our clients, if they have a candida issue, they have a betaine HCL issue, or they have a stomach acid issue and they'll need betaine HCL. So they kind of go hand in hand, such as like H. pylori also suppresses stomach acid. So almost everyone who has an H. pylori overgrowth will need betaine HCL.
All right, nice work, Steve. Here's a follow-up to that. I don't have instant feedback of D. I have C all the time. And sometimes I have die-off, where I'm crabby and I feel bad, probably from candida, when I cut out items. This makes it difficult to figure things out. Do you have any suggestions?
Thanks, Annie, and great. Yes, so going back to, you know, what you should change, what you should do right now. And the number one thing is when you're dealing with C, constipation, you need to get your fats up to at least 60% of your daily calories. You know, jack those up. It's really nature's natural lubricant. And also get your probiotics up to 30 to 40 billion CFUs a day. That should really get you over the constipation hump, and then you'll actually be able to start having some feedback. Again, I wouldn't wait to do those things, you know, as far as treating the candida. I would do those right away, because those are going to help battle the candida, and they're going to help everything else in your life. So I would go ahead and do those right away. Now, if you do that for like a week, you're at 60% of your calories, you've worked up to 34 billion CFUs of probiotics, and the constipation is still there. The next thing I would look at possibly doing is that you might want to try picking up some natural calm, which is a magnesium citrate, and try taking one dose of that at night before you go to bed. And a lot of people with constipation will have a little bit of magnesium deficiency, and the magnesium citrate will help get everything going again and really keep everything regular. So that's what I would do right away. And then I think if you work with your doctor, possibly on the candida, or maybe if you do the recommendations that we just talked about, that might take care of your candida symptoms as well. Okay, cool. So we're going to keep rolling with Sandy, because Sandy actually sent in quite a few questions, which is great. So we're going to answer them all in one big clump here. So I'm going to pitch a couple to Jordan, and we'll keep alternating. So she said, awesome session last time. I learned a lot. Everyone in my family and extended family with acid reflux is going to try the baking soda test. Smiley face. My husband and I are on test two and nada so far. Sad face. Glad I was already taking betaine HCL. By the way, if you are someone who has a hard time swallowing pills, Nutravine makes a SD legal small version. So that's good to know for everyone out there, because I didn't know that. So here's your first question of this part. What does mucus in the stool tell you?
All right, great question. So mucus is a common symptom of IBS, UC, and some Crohn's. A lot of celiacs have it too. By common symptom, I mean passing mucus. Mucus is normally created in the membrane of the lining of the large intestine. But when it becomes inflamed, when you have digestive disease, it produces excess pus and mucus as a protective measure. So it is a sign of very high inflammation. Well, what that tells you is that you should be focusing on food triggers, primarily the four horsemen, you know, the dairy, egg, nut products if you're eating them, and then keep fruit very, very low, honey very, very low. Those could be triggering your inflammation still. Beyond that, there's some common trigger foods like bell peppers, tomatoes, if you're using a lot of paprika, coconut milk we've seen. So those are the type of food triggers I'd be looking for first and foremost to calm down the inflammation. Then secondarily, you're going to want to look at trying some fish oil. We're going to be giving you a fish oil protocol in session 2 that you can follow to reduce inflammation. So I definitely try that first.
Cool, good answer. So let's keep rolling here. So why is 4 days the magic number for food testing, Jordan? And do you think it would change if you had bad constipation?
So the 4 days comes from, it usually takes 4 days to fully see the impacts of a food change. For example, that's how long it can take the body to completely get rid of things like the casein protein from your blood. So if you stop taking dairy, you know, eating dairy, sometimes it can take up to 4 days to have the casein out of your system. So it's a good timeline to cover the gap for most people with faster sore bowel motility. Constipation shouldn't change too much. You should see a change in your constipation if you're making tweaks for it. For example, if you really up your fats to 60%, you know that's what you're getting. You should see definitely within 4 days a change in that. So.
Cool, cool. Let's keep going. So her husband talked to the GI Pro guy and thought he said that the clients take 1 to 6 capsules per meal. I think he misheard because you indicated that most people take 1 to 2 per meal. Any guidance?
Sure. Joe is great at GI Pro. My thinking is that maybe he was referring to 1 to 6 per day. That would fit more in line with the usual recommendation of 1 to 2 per meal. I think they actually do recommend 2 per meal right on their website. So I'm guessing you meant per day there. I've seen some research that would suggest that there really isn't an upper limit to high-quality digestive enzymes because they can help you in so many ways, like repairing your intestinal lining and just being generally antimicrobial. So you could take them between meals if you thought it was helping you. But for now, I just focus on using it as a digestion tool and stick to 1 to 2 per meal. All right, excellent. So I'm going to keep rolling. I'm going to fire a couple at Steve here. So I cut out the four horsemen, and after eating an apple, I got bloating and mild stomach cramping. This sounds like your explanation of fructose malabsorption. I'm just curious as to why it's okay to eat 1 cup a day instead of complete elimination. I'm all for the 1 cup a day. I'm just curious.
Okay, great question, Sandy. So really the point here is all about moderation and sort of like taking the skeptical viewpoint. So this is all N equals 1, and we try to choose guidelines that we know will fit for, you know, like 80% of everyone. So my question to you would be, have you tested just trying to eat half of an apple? And the other thing I would say is maybe you should try cooking that apple too, because my assumption is usually when we go with the 1 cup a day thing, we're still talking about people who are not eating raw fruits and vegetables. We're talking about people who are cooking, possibly pureeing still. That's not always necessary. So I would say, you know, try cooking it first. Have you tried just introducing half of a cup of an apple the first day and then 1 cup the next day? You know, it goes back to, if we would have said 0, then we know that most people probably would be adverse to the rules. So we're just looking for everyone to have a little leeway and kind of see what individual results they get. So your unique solution really could be 0 fruit for maybe, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. We don't know. If that's what makes you feel the best, and then go with it. I mean, you make that call. That's just, remember, listening to your body and finding out what it's telling you. So I would say keep testing. If you're not cooking it, start cooking it and start with a half a cup. The other thing would be is that you could try pears or, you know, maybe just stay away from fruits for a little while and go after some vegetables and just see how that goes. Remember, we gave that thing at the end of the presentation session 1 about which foods to add and which order. Maybe you could try that. So I think that'll help you out.
All right, excellent, excellent. So little precursor here, this next question. How much has stress reduction tweaks helped your clients? Can you expand on what you discussed on the webinar?
Okay, yes and no. We'll be covering this more in depth in the last few weeks of the course, so stay tuned. But suffice to say that the gut-brain connection is very strong for what we've seen. You'd be really surprised at how much a couple nights of little sleep or one night of sleeplessness can really affect your digestion. Other things such as breathing exercises, yoga, definitely we've seen it in people improve their symptoms. These are not like cures. They're not like, I'm bleeding and I want my bleeding to go away, so I just started deep breathing yoga style and it went away. Not that kind of thing. But definitely they help out and they're really good with helping you go after that extra 20% of healing. But we'll definitely get more into that later. And just if you're interested in yoga and that kind of thing, you know, we're all about it. So go for it. Cool. So I'm going to pitch the next one to Jordan. What does darker colored stool mean? I know that black is bad because that may indicate blood, but how about just plain old dark brown? Why is light brown any better?
All right, good question. So this is a good subtle clue, so good pickup on there. One color is not really better than the other. But first off, if you see black, that's good. That you need to be worried about blood from ulcers. Black usually indicates that it's coming from the upper GI, like the small intestine area, maybe in the stomach. If you see gray, you want to be worried about problems with the drainage system of the gallbladder, like the liver, the pancreas, the bile ducts. That's a sign they're having some malabsorption problems, undigested fats in the stool. You'll have foul smell. You could have light yellow to gray, but that's the greasy and frothy type stools we've been talking about with fats. Bright red usually means it's coming, blood coming from the lower bowels or the rectum, like Steve talked about earlier. Could be a sign of hemorrhoids or just colonic polyps or issues at the end of the lower bowel that are causing bleeding. As far as light brown to dark brown, I'd say that's a good sign that things are going well. Mine will alternate depending on what I'm eating. For example, if I have beef versus like a lighter meat like chicken or turkey, that affects the shade. If I'm eating broccoli versus cauliflower, that can affect the color. In fact, like when we eat beets, my son and I both, when we eat beets, we'll have some red tint to the movements. So, definitely I wouldn't worry too much about it if you're like dark brown or light brown. I think both are showing good signs. So, but good catch. Keep looking at those subtle clues as much as you can. Okay, I'm going to pitch one back to Steve. Can you expand a bit more on the low-carb flu and other clients' experiences or successes?
Yeah, so it kind of boils – it's something we threw in there, and it comes kind of out of the – you'll see a lot of it talk about from maybe the paleo world or something like that, the primal world. And it kind of comes down to if your die-off and what you think is die-off is lasting longer than a week, maybe a week and a half, and it's mostly – like memory, concentration, brain fog, sleeplessness, maybe like some aches and pains or something like that. If it's that kind of stuff, probably it's more likely to be low-carb flu than it is actual die-off. A lot of the die-off stuff will actually manifest itself in more aggressive signs such as change in bowels, gas, no gas, nightmares, like supreme like brain fogginess where like you can't even function. So die-off is like one level higher than low carb flu as far as how severe the actual symptoms are, I guess is a good way to put it. And really it doesn't happen to everyone, but it does happen if you look kind of back at what your diet was and it tended to be higher than in sugars, you are probably going to have a harder time switching over. So I don't know if that kind of clears it up a little bit, but hopefully it does.
Yeah, I think that was good. I'm going to keep rolling, man. What do leg cramps mean and how can you stop them? Do they have anything to do with rapid weight loss, magnesium, or calcium?
Okay, cool. So this is a toughie. It really is. As far as I know, it would have nothing to do with the weight loss, but if you were doing like some super strenuous workouts or something, that could be part of the puzzle. To be brutally honest with you, the scientific community doesn't really understand cramping. They don't know what it means. They don't really know the pathways. the best knowledge available at this time really is it appears to be an electrolyte problem. Either it's one of two modes is how most people will define it at this point. It's either there's a total deficiency of one or more of all of your electrolytes in the body, or there's an imbalance between them, and that causes the cramping. Again, this is all speculation because the scientific community really doesn't understand it. But if we want to move on to kind of real-world results and what I've experienced and what some other clients have experienced, I'll just kind of give you my ideas and how they do kind of line up with what I just told you about. It's either possibly a deficiency of one or many and or an imbalance between them. So in the past, I've done a lot of extreme athletic events or super hot training sessions and, you know, done a lot of sweating, hard, really aggressive working out. And I have had, like, leg cramping as well as like hip cramps and that foot cramps, that kind of things. So one of the first things I tried doing, and I would recommend you try doing right away if you have leg cramps, is start supplementing your diet with a half a teaspoon of high quality sea salt each day. Sodium is one of the highest quantity or most abundant electrolytes in the body, and a lot of people when they end up going SCD, they end up cutting their sodium intake drastically right away. And then if you're someone who works out, you're going to be sweating the sodium out all the time. So it could be that you're deficient in sodium. If you try a half a teaspoon, like for 3 days, you don't see any change, try a half a teaspoon in the morning and a half a teaspoon at night for a total of 1 teaspoon a day for another 3 days. If nothing changes then we're probably thinking that it's maybe an imbalance or it's one of the like lesser quantity electrolytes. So the best thing that I found for this is using something called a buffered vitamin C powder. And buffered usually just means that it's easier for you to digest. But in this instance with the vitamin C powder, what you want to make sure is that the buffered vitamin C powder contains a specific ratio of vitamin C, calcium, magnesium, and potassium. And this was a specific ratio that was come up by a scientist, and he found that having the four in combination at a specific ratio enhanced the cofactors and the ability for the body to absorb them. So in these powders, they're really specific random dosages, but just try picking up one of them. The two brands that I would recommend are Thorne Research and Nutricology. And I would keep doing your salt dosage, and then I would start taking one dose of this whenever it fits into your schedule. It's not really necessary to put it anywhere, but you can try it at night or whenever closest to when you normally get the cramps. So between those two, I have not had any cramping problems in well over a year now. So I think that should work for you. If they don't, I'm really out of ideas. So hope that helps.
Good one, man. All right, we still got a lot of questions to cover, so I'm going to keep firing away. Based on fitday.com, it doesn't look like I'm eating enough calcium. I'm off dairy right now. Any suggestions?
Okay, cool. So Sandy asked all the hardest questions, seriously. But great question. So this is a super great area in the health industry, It actually is kind of an industry, but the health world and scientific community right now as well. One of the biggest and most expensive studies that just wrapped up, I think, beginning of this year, end of last year, was a NERSC study that showed that supplementing with calcium didn't really do anything for osteoporosis. So I'm assuming that's why you're watching your calcium. If so, that's great. I'm glad you're watching it. There's a whole bunch of conflicting research out there, and some of it actually suggests that the US RDA values are too high for calcium, maybe that it's more about your vitamin D than it is your calcium, or maybe it's actually mostly about your calcium versus your magnesium and the ratio in which you get those every day. Nobody knows, and I don't know. But what I can tell you is what my personal recommendation is and what I personally care about. And that is, as long as I'm around 600 to 800 a day and as long as you're around that, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think if you're eating SCD, you're off a lot of the industrial processed junk, you're supplementing prudently, I don't think you're going to have any problems. You could look into your vitamin D status and make sure that's decent, and we'll cover that in more detail later this week. So if that's not good enough for you and calcium is something that you really want to take care of and you really want to hit that number, then there's nothing that should stop you. Again, there's no research, good or really good or bad. You're not going to – if you supplement with like 500, so you get up to the recommended daily value for you, which might be 1,200 to 1,300 milligrams a day, go for it. Frida and many other quality supplement companies out there make calcium supplements that are SCD legal. The other thing you could do is you could cover your dosage with the vitamin C powder that I mentioned in the earlier question, because that does contain calcium as well. So again, it's kind of just personal preference. If you'd feel better on it, you want to try it, definitely go for it. All right, sweet. So wrapping up Sandy's questions, we're going to move on to question number 7 from Andy. Jordan, I'm going to pitch you this one. It's kind of long here. Andy's stuck in early phase 1, and he's having some up and downs with some awesome days, but then some bloody D-days. So he's only eating meats, water, butternut, and yellow squash, and carrots. It seemed when I introduced pears or apples, bloody D started coming back. Although there were some really good days in the last 21 of SCD, I decided to cut out grape juice and eggs 7 days ago, hoping to see if I felt better. And I have not had dairy, yogurt, bananas, nuts, or honey since day 1 of SCD. And I've been taking SCD Ultra Starter Kit from GI Pro Health for 10 days now, which I believe that's the fish oil, the multivitamin, the probiotics. I'm not sure if the enzymes are in there too, but I think they might be. So I just introduced apples 2 days ago, got bloody D every morning so far. It might be from high work stress, it might be from less sleep times, etc., but I'm working through it and will keep up the apples and try to get much more sleep and manage the stress. Although I'm afraid to introduce a new food until the blood stops. Any additional advice for recognizing okay setbacks and for working through food introductions would be great. I can't eliminate much more than what I'm eating now without going crazy from food boredom. I did cheat with a Laura bar last Sunday, and maybe it took 2 or 3 days for the effects to show up. Many thanks, Andy D.
All right, great question, Andy. So the first thing I would ask is, you know, are we talking about bloody D like you used to get from colitis, or are we talking about possible hemorrhoid D with some bright red blood, you know, being caused by maybe a more solid or difficult to pass stool? You know, assuming that it's diarrhea based, I'm going to assume that it's probably part of the colitis. I would definitely take the apples out. That's showing you right away that that's triggering some blood, that's triggering some inflammation. It might just be, you know, too much sugar too early. You're going to want to focus on getting hold of that inflammation first and foremost. So start by getting more calories from fats. You know, start supplementing with coconut oil with your breakfast like crazy. You know, you didn't really mention much about drugs. You could try the stomach acid test. But I would definitely focus on inflammation in this area and start with the food triggers. The stress could be playing a part. The sleep could be playing a part. But it's usually a smaller part that you work on once you've got your food in place. Let's say cut apples for now. That's definitely giving you a sign that it's triggering blood. You could test pears. Sometimes people do better with pears than apples. I'm assuming that you are cooking those. Pureeing can help if you're not doing that. But, you know, use our guidelines for cooked cucumbers. Also, you could try that, followed by some spinach if you want to go the vegetable route to introduce, you know, more variety. But right now the food's triggering some inflammation. So, you know, it's not uncommon. We're going to talk about the fish oil protocol in session 2. That can help immensely with inflammation, but I wouldn't keep eating the apples. I would definitely pull those back out, and you got to get to your feel-good zone and then work on introducing more of those things. So I gave a couple options there, so hopefully that gives you some direction. Okay, great. I'm going to keep rolling. This question is from Ruth. I still can't take a multivitamin. They make me feel sick, tired, and cause D. I haven't been able to tolerate them for about 2 years. Since being on SCD for 6 months, I've tried Frida's SCD multivitamin 2 or 3 times, and they make me feel terrible. I am able to take vitamin D and vitamin C, and I'm afraid to take any others. Any suggestions?
Good, cool. Thanks, Ruth. So we've kind of vaguely remember hearing there's some talk about it on the internet, and maybe some possible people that we've talked to, where if their multivitamins had iron in them, they cause some problems. So I'm not sure if the multivitamins you've taken in the past, Ruth, had iron in them, but that could have been the source of the sick and tired. If it was just that Frida's multivitamins, you tried those and they make you feel terrible, there's some other options. One of the first things I would ask is, how many were you taking per day? And could you attempt to maybe work from one pill for like 3 days, and go to 2 pills for 3 days, then go to 3 pills for 3 days, up to the standard dosage? Maybe it's just an introduction problem you're having. Or it could be just that the Frida pills aren't really what you need for your body. The Frida pills don't have a capsule. They're just a like a hard chelated pill. So you might want to try some GI ProHealth stuff. They have the SCD Complete for adults, which is a capsule. And they also actually make a GI Pro Child, which is a powdered version. And that might even do your stomach better or your body better. Also, Claire Labs makes VitaSpectrum, which is a SC Legal multivitamin, and they're obviously going to use a different types of capsule as well. And then there's a Lee Silsby, and they make some ASD. They make two of them that are SC Legal. One is a vitamin and mineral powder without stevia or flavor, and the other one's vitamin and mineral ultra pure powder. So both of those are powders, and maybe they'll be easier on your gut. They're definitely a lot more expensive than the other ones that I mentioned. But a lot of those were the GI Pro Child and then the Lee Silsby's were made specifically for ASD children. So they are the purest and the most free of everything on the market. So maybe those might work better with your system. Okay, so Ruth sent us in another question. And she said that today she had a tooth pulled and an implant put in its place. The dentist put me on 3 days of Augmentin to be followed by 7 days of Amoxicillin for a total of 10 days. Because it's up near the sinus. Any suggestions for getting through the next 10 days? And both of those are antibiotics, if people didn't know that. And how to get back on track after finishing them?
Yes, great question, Ruth. So a couple of things to help with antibiotics. Great for noting that you need to do something here to help out. So upping your probiotics is definitely going to support the healthy bacteria. And that's what you need to do here, is to support the healthy bacteria while you're taking the antibiotic, which is going to wipe out pretty much atom bomb your bacteria. So you just want to keep that elevated levels of healthy bacteria. So you want to make sure you're getting at least 30 to 40 billion CFUs if you can. You might even double that while you're on your dosage. I know you're outside the U.S., so try to get something comparable to what GI ProHealth uses. That's just pure lactobacillus acidophilus. The second thing, this is more optional advanced kind of thing, but you could take a healthy yeast like S. boulardii. That's going to help protect the overgrowth of bad bacteria and yeast during the round of antibiotics. It doesn't get killed by the antibiotic, so it's only going to help support the healthy microflora. You can try to get something comparable with what they have at GI ProHealth as well. But doing those two things will help dramatically. Also, be extra cautious about eating really low fruit and low honey while in the antibiotics so that you don't allow bad bacteria to take over in your fragile state, but primarily get those probiotics up, even double them while you're on the antibiotic route. Okay, great. We're running tight on time here, so I'm going to keep rolling. Sometimes when I eat, I get cramps in the same two spots, one on the right and one on the left part of the colon. I usually have gas as well, but any clue as to why the pain will be in the exact same two spots? I can't really isolate it to certain foods yet. Thanks so much, Terry.
Hey, Terry. Great question. And, you know, we can't really say for sure. This is a great subtle clue, but it's just a little bit vague on what it could be telling us. So because you've noticed it's kind of in the same two spots and sort of localized on two different areas, it could be many things, to be honest with you. One could be it's localized in specific areas of your body. That could be where there's still some bad bacteria, bad yeast overgrowth, and they're causing excessive gas production when you eat and then pushing on your intestines, which is causing the pain. Say you had UC, you might have some ulcers or you might have some extreme inflammation such as like a stricture in those areas. So after you eat, you could experience some pain there. And then you would kind of probably know a lot more about that if you had had some sort of endoscopies or colonoscopy or anything like that. Otherwise, what I'd probably be looking for is that maybe there's a trigger food that you haven't caught yet that's causing the gas and pain. Definitely start with the four horsemen, take out the dairy, egg, definitely the low fruit and honey, which tends to drive a lot of the gas for most people. So keep testing if you've tried taking those four foods out. If you've tried the three supplements that we've been talking about, which is the probiotics, digestive enzymes, and checked your BTNHCL, then maybe it's time to maybe talk with your doctor again and get another test. Cool. So as we get wrapping up here, fire you another one, Jordan. Brian has to say, after about a month on the diet, my urgency and frequency has greatly improved. However, my stools haven't been consistently formed. For the most part, I stick to phase one and phase two foods. I likely need some digestive enzymes in my regime. But my question is whether or not it is safe to take probiotics, even if I'm eating homemade yogurt daily. If so, should I just be taking a lower dosage? Thanks.
All right, Brian, great to hear your urgency and frequencies down. That's awesome. Couple things to consider. I would say, right, first and foremost, consider testing no dairy for 4 days and see if that doesn't give you more form that you're looking for. I'd be surprised if you didn't have good results from that in and of itself. But to get to your question, I wouldn't hesitate to take probiotics on top of or in place of the yogurt. If it's in place of the yogurt, you know, go up to 30 to 40 billion CFUs. However, they might not really be necessary with the yogurt. That remains to be seen, you know. They're probably not going to hurt. I'd order them, but I would definitely order them and test taking them instead of dairy for a week and see if you don't make leaps and bounds in your healing. I imagine that you might be being held back right now from the yogurt daily.
Yeah, and it could be what he talked about. It sounds kind of like a leading question there, but he adds that he likely definitely needs to try some enzymes, because I know we've talked with several people who are kind of in the same position he is, and it either could be the dairy or it might, like, most likely is needing some enzymes or some betaine to get you over that hump.
Ah, great point. Good add there, Steve. Thanks. I'm going to keep rolling here. What's the best way to transition to a new brand and new type of probiotic, i.e. going from VSL3 to Scodophilus? Cold turkey, slow or gradual? This is from Ashley.
Okay, great question, Ashley. Definitely slow and gradual is probably the best thing for sure, unless you like to shock your system and end up with digestive consequences. So what I would say is, say you were at like a kind of a high dosage of VLS3. I know a lot of people might take like 3 pills of that, which is quite a few. Maybe go down to 1 pill a day and then quit the next day. And that very next day, have your next probiotic on hand. And if it's Scodophilus, 10 billion CFUs, just take one that day. So taper down to 1 pill of the VLS3, the lowest dose you could go. And then the next day, take 1 pill of the Scodophilus, and then work your way up over the next couple weeks to 30 to 40 billion. By that, I would say like maybe every 3 days, go from 1 pill, then 3 days later go up to 2 pills, then kind of split 2 in the morning, 2 at night, and just see what changes happen. But I would definitely be aware that you probably will experience some changes right away when you do the taper, and you want to give your system a little bit of time to stabilize. It was kind of like that change graph we showed you in the last session one. You might want to go back and review that about what happens when we make changes in our body. So expect some fluctuations, but I think you'll be okay. All right, cool. So Amy sent in a question for you, Jordan, or we're going to send it to you anyways. So I'm still cramping midday and I'm on no dairy, 1 to 2 servings of fruit, minimal eggs, very strict stage one still, but it's not unbearable, just rather annoying. I've been fine with eggs up until now, so I can't imagine that's it. But that's the only one of the four horsemen I've been eating. Any thoughts?
All right, Amy. So I would start by thinking of this as a test, because you're going to keep doing it until you get rid of it. Got to have that engineering mindset, right? So I always look at fruit and honey with this symptom first. This is the mysterious midday cramping, midday diarrhea. The first test, you know, try zero fruit a day for 4 days straight and see if it doesn't go away. If that doesn't stop it, you know, you can keep doing the 1 to 2 servings and then go to test number 2, which is going to be egg, because I've seen that happen pretty frequently too, especially if you're eating it for breakfast every day. I know you said you have a minimal amounts, but sometimes that can be just enough. So the second test would be do zero egg per day for 4 days. And if that doesn't work, you got to keep testing. So look at your list of trigger foods that we gave out in the session one and go through each one of those. You know, I'm talking about like the all the way from tomato to pepper to paprika spices. It could be you're eating SCD legal canned tuna and there's something in there that's doing it to you. So never stop testing until you reach your feel good zone. That's the big point here. But again, you know, just to start out, I would definitely look at trying zero fruit, zero honey for 4 days and see if it doesn't go away.
Yeah, I think the big clue to me when I read that question to Amy is that it sounds like you're getting the cramping at the same time every day. It's kind of like the similar question we had earlier where she gets the same pain in the same location all the time. So anything that's like that, normally it ends up that the answer is something that you're eating on a regular basis, maybe several hours before that. Or in the case of the earlier person, it's the same thing, you know, maybe bacterial overgrowth and you're feeding it too much honey or something like that. So I think Jordan laid out a couple really good tests for you there. I think those are definitely some things to try.
Okay, man. Well, I think that about wraps up our 60 minutes here. This has been a really good Q&A session. Thank you for all the questions that you've sent in. This has been really valuable. And I think that's about it. Steve, you want to wrap things up?
Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. This has been Steve Wright and Jordan Reisner, and you are listening to the SCD Advanced Techniques Q&A Session 1.